They follow you around.
Standing orders.
We're going to open our Rules Committee for today, February 18th, 3:30, well, let's go to 3:43. And just so people know, I'm going to do a little housekeeping first. House Bill 3703 will be carried over to tomorrow. And House Bill 3707 will also be carried over to tomorrow. And we had left off in a hearing with regard to credit history checks, and so I feel obligated to start that one. So we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1045A. And we left off with Cindy Robert, Paul Crosgrove, and Brent Wolf. We want all three come up. Whoever would like to start.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert, and I represent NACM Oregon. We're an affiliate of the National Association of Credit Management. We've been doing business in Oregon for 110 years. We represent 970 corporations, helping them with their financial and their credit needs, all the way from your small mom-and-pop shops to your high-tech companies in Oregon, from Boyd's Coffee to the Bonneville Power Administration. I am here today because many of our members use credit histories when hiring for certain jobs. So I ask you, when you're considering this well-intentioned bill, to keep three thoughts in mind. First of all, we're not talking about a credit score or a credit rating. We're not talking about a slice of time. We're talking about a credit history that shows patterns of behavior. I think that Terry is currently passing out to you a credit history that was run on a manager in our firm at NACM at our headquarters. She applied for a job. She was one of the finalists. In NACM, we don't actually pull a credit history until you've been offered the job pending that information. So the information was collected after she applied, and you can see on there what a credit history has on it. And I was hoping, or thinking, that maybe y'all hadn't seen one of those. So I wanted to make sure you saw it. It's very basic information, and it shows history, including points and scores over a period of time. It does not show just how you've been behaving in the last year or two of economic decline. It is our thought that you have to trust employers in Oregon to use that information correctly. You have to trust that they're looking at that sheet and getting information that's really pertinent. Secondly, we believe credit history can be a useful tool, and even the bill recognizes that it can be a useful tool in the exemptions that it has in it. In addition, Section 2D says, allows for use of credit history if information is substantially job-related. I would say to you that that's when we use it now. Credit histories cost money, and they take time to run. And our members don't run credit histories unless they think there's substantial reason in the job to do so. My member businesses would tell you that credit history is a valuable tool to them for several reasons. Is it because it's going to show the applicant's work ethic? No. Is it going to predict and analyze the productivity of that applicant? No. Will it tell them about possible fraud or theft by that applicant? No. But what it can offer is a glimpse of how someone handles their responsibilities. And that's what employers are looking for. There are no other ways to learn that about someone's character. Credit references are provided because we know they're going to say good things about us. Employment history tells you nothing about how that person did at their job. And we've taken away the ability for a former employer to even comment on how someone's doing. My best friend works in human resources at Mentor Graphics. My husband works at Hewlett Packard. If Hewlett Packard lets someone go and that person applies at Mentor Graphics. My friend Julie can call Hewlett-Packard, and the only thing she can find out are the dates that person worked there. She cannot find out how that person did there. We've taken that ability away. So you may not think that this is the best tool, but right now it's the only tool we have that gives you a small glimpse of character. Finally, we do not believe that this bill will affirm or expand the potential pool for people to be hired from despite the economy. Let me give you two examples. When I was talking to my members about this, one told me that, gosh darn it, it's not going to make the pool I choose from bigger, it's going to make it smaller because I am only going to hire people I know or come with references from people I know. That's how he was going to handle it. Another employer told me that she actually recently hired someone based on their credit history. They'd had a problem in the last 6 months. She saw that they were handling it with their creditors, and to her, that showed responsibility. So having to deal with the economic time today, having to buy your groceries with your credit card, that does not equal bad credit history. It's how you respond to it that equals bad credit history. And we think employers will look at that, and we think we have to trust employers to do that as well. I'll close with this. Representative Nolan, you recently had a press release on the unemployment decline, and in it you said, I applaud those Oregon businesses that hired workers last month. Oregon is a great place to do business because our workforce is well-trained and highly productive. We need to help those businesses who continue to invest in Oregon. So true. And one of my concerns is that we have some great ideas in this body, but sometimes they conflict. We come here with a bill this session that says let's buy Oregon. That's great, but we put so many restrictions and impediments in the way of Oregon business so they can't even manufacture what we want to buy anymore. We want Oregon's workforce to be the most productive, and yet we take away the tools that make sure that employers can help hire the very best applicant. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Cosgrove representing Oregon Financial Services Association. I was before this committee now 2 days ago testifying on a bill that had a private right of action. And one of the things when I mentioned what OFSA is, I think I mentioned it's consumer finance companies. We've been around for many years. The association was formed in the 30s. But I neglected to describe what my members are. And I think in the context of this bill, I need to be able to do that so you can understand our concerns. There are two national chains and one regional chain of consumer finance companies that are our members and that are operating in Oregon. There used to be six or seven. But almost all of our members are not that. They are, in fact, family-owned businesses. Some only have one office, some have a couple of offices. There are people like Tom Palmer and Credit Concepts in Eugene, or Steve Martin and Martin Financial in Baker City. And we have a one office member approved credit in Bend, people in Milwaukee, Oak Grove, variety of places. These are small business people who are, in fact, using their own capital or capital that they have borrowed from other financial institutions to make loans to consumers in Oregon. Sometimes those loans in the past have been secured by real estate. Sometimes they're secured by cars. Sometimes we help finance the purchase of cars. Sometimes we make individual unsecured loans. When they hire someone to work in their relatively small offices who are going to be given the authority to do to evaluate their customers' credit, to review credit reports on their customers, to make credit decisions, to loan money, and to handle private financial information of their customers, those owners of those businesses feel that those people need to have the information about those potential employees' own credit reports. It seems logical that someone who's making decisions based on credit reports, we ought to know what's in their own credit report. And they have historically, for all of those folks, pulled credit reports as a condition of employment. Now, the bill has some exceptions, and it's been described as having an exemption for financial institutions, but I'd like to refer you to line 12. and 13. This bill does not apply to employers that are federally insured banks or credit unions. And the rationale, and I made notes when the proponents were testifying, is this kind of information has been used by those businesses for some time, and it's because those businesses handle money, and it's because these exemptions are there because it's a way to determine whether people have good judgment. I would suggest to you those reasons apply equally to my folks who are still included in the bill. And I'm sorry to say, when we made this argument on the other side of the building, we just didn't get much acceptance of that as an appropriate additional amendment. So if we are not exempted like the insured banks or credit unions, what we have to rely on is the issue of, is it substantially job-related? Now, I've heard that the Bureau of Labor and Industries has general rulemaking authority under Oregon's Unlawful Employment Act, and I agree that's true. And in the short 4 months between when you leave this building and the governor, if this bill passes, signs this bill and it becomes effective, and it then applies to Oregon employers as of July 1st, so that's about 4 months, Boley could arguably pass rules. It'd probably have to do emergency rules, which means its consultation with people like us to learn our issues and our problems would be minimal. And in any case, that rule, if it was passed, applies to the enforcement actions Boley would take against us. Well, frankly, my members aren't particularly concerned about enforcement from Boley. We think that we could make a decent argument that our folks have historically, as I've heard the commissioner say, that one of the reasons for the exemption is historical use. Our folks have historically used it. We use it for people who it sort of makes sense for, at least when you think about it. And we could probably do that. What I'm concerned about is, and my members are particularly concerned about, is the private right of action, which Boley's rules and its standards and its definition of what is substantially job-related does not bind a private litigant. That issue will be a jury issue. Now, my big chain members aren't so concerned about this bill. They have lots of lawyers. They have big human resources departments. They'll figure a way to deal with this issue. And even if they deal with it in a way that turns out to be causing them some liability, they're big. They can afford to handle and defend litigation. A small one-person consumer loan office, or one-owner consumer loan office, with a couple of employees sitting in one of Oregon cities and counties, or cities and towns, that kind of litigation is at least incredibly serious, and perhaps so serious that, in fact, that office can't continue to exist. I want to give you an example of why I think that's true. Last year, this body decided, in terms of implementing a federal law, which ironically requires our mortgage loan originators to have credit reports pulled. So they're probably exempt. Now, mind you, if the person next to them is doing a car loan, they're not exempt because federal law doesn't require that. You required our mortgage loan originators who work in these offices to have their credit report pulled, but you also subjected them to criminal penalties and private rights of action for licensing violations. And we argued to this body, unfortunately, unsuccessfully, that that would be a level of liability that some of these small companies couldn't handle. I'd like to report to you that they have publicly stated before the department and have accomplished this in terms of actually conducting, all of them have stopped making mortgage loans. Because to a one-person office, the thought of getting a civil liability suit filed against them is that dangerous, is that expensive, and is that deadly to the business. I don't know how they'll handle this, because they don't have a way around this unless you do an appropriate exemption, and we would argue you should, because we're nothing different in terms of the process that they're using than a bank or a credit union, and if one is exempted, it makes sense for the other one to be as well. But if you don't do that, they'll be put in a real pickle. They've already stopped making mortgage loans because of the threat of private litigation. This means that how they handle their employees is going to be also another source of potential private litigation and liability, and it's a real difficult problem. So I would suggest to you this bill needs to, at the very least, be amended in a couple of respects. One, the exemption for financial institutions needs to be broadened out to all those people who handle money and personal confidential information, which is the kind of people for whom us and other companies similarly situated currently pull credit reports on those employees. And two, the time period for implementation of this bill, 4 months after you leave this building, is way too short for all of the employers all over Oregon Oregon to figure out how they're going to comply and to see what Boley does with rules. So with that, I would urge at least amendments, if not opposition to the bill. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brant Wolf. I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association. The OTA membership consists of small independent telephone companies that operate throughout the state of Oregon. I have to admit I'm late to the process on this bill. I didn't believe that it would have an impact on my members, and I think that's true to a large extent. However, this was brought to my attention yesterday, and one of our small companies does, in fact, use credit checks when they hire in their hiring process for employees in cash handling positions. I understand this bill has been worked on, amended to address some of the concerns of the business community, and I appreciate that. But here's the example that was given to me. These frontline customer service representatives, they're interacting with the customers all day long. They're placing orders. They're placing service calls, things of that matter. And they're also taking in payments, cash, credit cards, personal checks, things of that nature. And it's important that they have the ability to use a credit check in their vetting process. The OTA were opposed to this bill. I just need to go on the record and say that as late as I am to this. This is the first time any of you have heard this from me, and I can only apologize for that. But I respectfully would request that you reconsider this bill and oppose this bill. There's at least one small business in one small town in this state who thinks they're going to be negatively impacted by this bill. I thank you for your time.
Questions of these witnesses? I just have one question for Ms. Roberts, and that one is, we had some testimony yesterday about accuracy of these reports, mm-hmm. and if you're going to use them and the employee doesn't have a chance to look it over because they may not have looked at their credit reports and all of a sudden it's being used, is there any way for you to check accuracy, or have you found there to be a problem with accuracy?
Mr. Chair, I actually don't represent a credit union per se. Okay. I represent an association of people who use credit management. He can answer that, but I do want to tell you that on the sheet that I gave you, you know how I like to talk. on the sheet that I gave you, the five of the credit history, the last two pages include the rights that are given to every person. And one of those, I was reading it while I was eating, was very interesting. If you're going to go out and seek employment, you have a right to a free credit report at that time. Even if you've already used your one for the year, you have a right to get that, look it over, and it has to be fixed within 30 days if there are inaccuracies because you're going out to get a job.
Mr. Chair, if I may also, my members are the ones who use credit reports to make decisions that are very important to their business. So, in fact, I think they know about what's good about them and what's bad about them. And no credit report is perfect, that's for sure. I think the data you heard from other witnesses is a gross exaggeration of the level of errors in credit reports. And that's based on long years of history of a lot of financial institutions using them. But, in fact, because they know they're not perfect, clearly, a small error, a small difference, or a small inconsistency in a credit report is likely not to be a basis for making a decision about somebody's employment. What we're looking for is the multiple years. Do we have a pattern of always being late, all of the time, avoiding bills, bankruptcies, and foreclosures? If that's the case, not all of those can be errors. that would raise the concerns. And in fact, what we would tend to do in that kind of thing is ask the employer, the applicant, to justify is this right? Is this correct information? And if it was, we'd have serious concerns about putting them in charge of our money and our relationships with our customers.
And I guess the other question I have for you, Mr. Cosgrove, is it true? I mean, this is not out of business. It means they couldn't use credit checks. I mean, they could make a decision that we're going to figure out other ways to interview people and make a decision on hiring. With a tool that they didn't have, 20 years ago, they have, I don't know how long ago that we've been doing credit checks, but I think it's around that time. They made decisions prior to that without them. They could go back to doing that.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's more like 30 or 40 years, but I think your point is still well taken. We have a whole lot of restrictions that you and the federal government have placed on us in terms of accuracy and important non-misleading disclosures and relationships with our customers. We can be sued from any number of respects for doing that. We have to show in those contexts that we're doing everything we reasonably can to minimize the cause of errors. This is one of the things, if we have not been able to use this tool, and as Cindy points out, some of the old tools we always used to be able to use of calling up the past employer really don't work anymore as a practicality because of fear of litigation by the old employer. This is the only tool we've got. We're worried about being exposed to the situation of you hired somebody that you knew or should have known was a scofflaw, and you let them have my data, and they've misused it. That's the kind of concern that causes us to want to do this. Now, if you take away this tool, will we go out of business? No. How will we hire employees? I think Ms. Roberts pointed out the way we'll have to do it. We'll only hire those people who we know and can independently verify from anecdotal friends and neighbors kind of thing, is this person reliable? It means that the pool of people we can choose from will be greatly limited, and we'll be much more careful about that.
Okay. Any other questions for this representative?
Am I right that Hawaii and Washington State are the other two states that have gone this direction?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garrett, I've heard that. I don't personally know that, but I believe that to be true, yes.
Is there anything you can provide us in terms of case law that's emerged yet that you think has demonstrated anything inconsistent with the intent, what I think is the intent of this legislation, which is to be, I mean, I understand your argument that it could be read more broadly than I think the intent is. Do we have any results yet to help us shed light on that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garrett, my understanding is the Washington bill, which is most like this, was passed in 2007 but was not effective until 2009. So if there's been litigation, it means that somebody has made an adverse action, either not hired or fired someone who has then gone through and found an attorney and filed a case at the trial level, which, as you know, are not reported cases. And so the answer is, to the best of my knowledge, there's no reported case law out of Washington. I'm not sure about Hawaii, and I don't even know when its bill went into effect. So I'm sorry, I can't answer that. I'll try to find out and let you know.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Next, we will have Henry Kramer and John Bartholomew.
Chair Roble and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Henry Kramer. I represent the Bus Project. We work to get young people and new people involved in the democratic process. I'm appearing in support of Senate Bill 1045A. Wanted to speak briefly about how this bill will address the needs of young Oregonians as youth, alongside low-income communities and communities of color, are among the most affected demographics by the current system, the current widespread use of employment credit checks. Like most Oregonians, young people are hurting a lot in this economy. According to the Oregon Employment Department, Oregonians under age 35 are unemployed at a 15.3% unemployment rate, 4 points higher than the already too high 11% unemployment rate in Oregon. If you look at Oregonians 25 and under, that number is 21% unemployment. And for a few other pertinent figures, skyrocketing tuition costs are leaving the average college graduate with $20,000 of student debt by the time they graduate. The average 18 to 24-year-old is paying 30% of their income in debt payment, which is three times the recommended ceiling for payment on debt. And 18 to 24-year-old bankruptcy has doubled over the last 10 years, which is a statistic recorded before the recession began. I can only assume that it's gone higher. So middle and low income college graduates are entering the job market and finding that, for one reason, because of the widespread use of credit checks and job applications, opportunities are significantly limited because of the very student loans that helped them go to college in the first place. The number of recent college graduates with job offers fell 21% last year. That number is expected to keep falling, even as employment rises. And, of course, poor credit and unemployment have a larger effect on non-college graduates than they do on those with degrees. We need jobs desperately. The longer we delay starting a career, the harder it is for this generation of Oregonians to compete in the global economy. Studies have found that when a young person in their 20s experiences lengthy unemployment, they are significantly more likely to never have a family wage job, never have a living wage job, and significantly more likely to experience severe alcoholism or depression later in life. And we need to remove irrational impediments to qualify people getting jobs. There's, and many people have said, there's no statistical correlation between somebody's credit history and their capacity to perform a job well, to be a productive employee, or to commit fraud. Still, 40% of businesses, or 50% or 60%, the number I've heard is 40%, but I've heard that it's higher, are using credit histories to screen their employees, which is up from 25% just 10 years ago. When working people lose jobs in this economy, we tell them to go back to school to get a new job or to be prepared for a different kind of career to get retrained. But when most working people go back to school, they have to take out some sort of debt, and that could currently cost them a job that they would otherwise get because of that debt. In the same vein, many unemployed people are forced to use credit to pay their bills when they experience lengthy unemployment, which begins a downward spiral of their capacity to get out of debt by getting a job which they can't get because of their debt. This bill can't do everything, but it can help end some of the vicious cycles caused by this recession. And for that reason, we request that you pass this bill. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Bartholomew. I'm with the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, OSPIRG. And we support this bill, 1045. And I'm going to focus on just one simple reason, because it's something we've actually done a report on a few years ago, and that is the rate of errors in credit reports. My organization did a report in 2004 that noted that 25% of all credit reports contained errors serious enough to lead to a denial of credit, and 79% contained some kind of errors. And I would be happy to send that report, a link to that report, to every member of this committee if you're interested in reading the full report. Now, even if the industry since that time has improved their accuracy since our report was published, there is no way to verify that every credit report is accurate. I know I've actually checked my credit report a few years ago, found errors, and I haven't checked it since. The simple fact that if someone is denied a job because of errors that weren't their fault, that is simply wrong. I'll repeat the same mantra again. There is no study that has shown a correlation between job performance and their credit record. And since credit records definitely, there are credit records that contain errors, I see no reason not to pass this legislation as drafted. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Questions for these members? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm getting my thought here, just a moment.
No problem.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It just took me a moment to get my thoughts together. Henry, you mentioned the significant growth in the amount of credit history check used as part of employment practice. Why?
Chair Roblin, Representative Hanna, I couldn't tell you as I don't work for I don't own a business. I don't work for a credit check firm. And they could probably better answer that question. My guess is there are more people applying for jobs and business owners are looking for something. That said, there's no correlation between somebody's productivity or their capacity to be a good employee and the credit history. So I believe that the representative from Unite here had also a very good explanation yesterday about the aggressive marketing of these services, which I believe has grown over time.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Follow-up, yes.
Thank you. So I guess I'll ask you that same question then. So do you believe that the 50 to 55% of businesses, all the federal and state agencies that require a credit check, simply do so because of the great salesmanship of credit reporting agencies?
Chair Roblin, Representative Hanna, I certainly couldn't tell you. I could only give you my personal opinion and my best guess, which probably doesn't do justice to the reasons that business owners do what they do.
So just a follow-up.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm just trying to determine, do you think there's any value to a credit check in employment?
Chair Roblin, Representative Hanna, there's no statistical correlation, and so I can't see a reason to do so.
Follow-up?
Follow-up.
So the agencies, both federal and state, that require it why do we have an exemption for them if there's no value to that?
Chair Roblin, Representative Hannah, I wasn't involved in the drafting of this legislation, and so I certainly couldn't give you an optimal answer to that question.
Thank you. Another question.
Okay.
Henry, you talked about the error rate in credit history. Is there any indication that a person who has had an error on their credit report is unable to get a loan?
Chair Roblin, Representative Hannah, we are aware that that's happened in the past, that people who have errors have been denied for loans.
Hold on, follow-up question, because maybe you misunderstood my question. Is there any indication that if you've had an error, you could not get a loan? Not if it's ever happened. Is there any indication that if there was an error, that you haven't been able to get a loan?
Chair Roblin, Representative Hannah, I'm not exactly sure that I understand the question.
Okay, I'll slow down and go very slow. If we use the example of me, and I got my credit report, and there was an error in my credit report, and I went to a lender and applied for a loan, and I explained the error on the credit report, is there a reason that I could not get a loan?
Representative Hannah, you have a right to correct those errors. And that should accommodate that concern. I guess I would take it to the point that most people applying for jobs don't really think at first about checking their own credit record. I mean, we have the ads on TV for freecreditreport.com. That's mostly about getting loans. It's not promoted that you should be doing this before you apply for jobs. So to answer your question, as best I can, you should be able to correct it and get the loan based on, of course, other criteria. I mean, you may still be denied that loan if your credit rating is poor.
Okay. I appreciate it, and it takes a while to explain that, doesn't it? But I guess my point about this is if I had an error and I was still able to get the loan, if I had an error, I might still be able to get the job. Would you agree with that?
Representative Roblin, Representative Hannah, that's a possibility, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I do have a question,
there
actually.
There is a question.
So if there was an error on my credit report, and an employer was choosing not to hire me because of that, what opportunity would I have to let the employer know that there was an error on my credit report? Would I know that my credit report had been pulled?
Chair Roblin, Representative Gelser, it depends, I believe. I believe that there are cases where employee or applicants have been told that their credit report came back and they were denied a job. There was the article in the Oregonian highlighting, was the Oregonian or the Willamette Week? There was an article in one of the big newspapers about a certain individual who was applied for a job at a Plaid Pantry or one of those quickie marts and was told directly that it was because of his credit report. Now, if he was able, if he knew that and he was able to find out that it was because of an error, he could correct it, but a lot of times applicants do not know that it was because of a credit report being pulled that they were denied the job.
Thank you.
Brings up a new question.
Representative Hannah.
Thank you. Henry, so are you suggesting that an employer could run a credit check without notifying the person who was applying for the job?
Chair Roblin, Representative Hannah, that's not a question that I have an answer for. I can find that out.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions of these witnesses?
Mr. Chair, another question.
Thank you, that's fine. I think I recall in testimony yesterday that the Fair Credit Reporting Act from federal law required notification when the credit report is run. That may be wrong, but someone can correct this if that's true.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Next we have Jim Markey, Mike Dewey, and on a slightly different issue but the same bill, John Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jim Markey, I represent TransUnion. We have a heck of a sales force out there. Be careful because we may talk you into pulling a credit report. There's a lot of misinformation out there, and I'd like to just correct a few things that have been said. First of all, there is a Fair Credit Reporting Act at the federal level. It was reauthorized a few years ago, and it affords consumers many protections, and many of those protections that are afforded consumers are because of the good work of Congresswoman Hooley, who took the lead in the Financial Services Committee in Congress for that reauthorization. First of all, citizens are allowed one free credit report each year from each of the three credit reporting agencies, TransUnion and Experian and Equifax. We encourage folks to check one of those reports each 4 months so that you're constantly, if you do that, you can check your credit report three times a year for free. Doesn't cost you anything. And that's always available, and I want to say that TransUnion offered that in Oregon before it was state law or the federal law. When you apply for a job, an employer can only pull your credit report or look at your credit history with your permission. So it has to get your permission. Now, in all fairness, oftentimes that is part of the job application and says signing this application gives us the authority to look at your credit history. If you don't get the job and that credit history was any part of the decision-making process under the federal act, the employer is required to send you a notice of adverse action. And at that point, several other things kick in with the federal law, and I'm not completely conversant with this, but you are afforded an opportunity to talk with the employer and to see what was on your credit report and all of that. Now, I want to say that the three bureaus have gone together, and they do have a website where you can go and easily check your own credit report. And also on that website is a fairly simple method to dispute anything on your credit report that you think is in error. And in fact, I recently checked my credit report, as I do routinely, and found an error on my Experian credit report. I would never find one on TransUnion, I'm sure. But it was simply an error of a former address. I had actually purchased a vehicle for the corporation and used my business address, and they then had that as a former address where I lived, resident address. And I simply got on the website and wrote to them, and about 10 days later, I got a notice that it had been corrected. It was a very simple process. I know that people say it's complicated. I just don't think it's that complicated. Errors on credit reports. You've heard this term, 37%, and I think somebody said 50% have errors. And now we have a new Osberg study, or an Osberg study. I think it was a gentleman from Frostburg. It said 25%. We estimate about 5% errors in the industry in those credit reports. And again, I'm sure that those are on the other two bureaus' files, not ours. I think it was the 37% figure. There's an interesting report from GAO that disputed some of the findings in some of these so-called studies. In one of the studies that was bandied about across the nation by consumer groups, the consumer group went around their office and asked 20-some employees to look on their credit report and see if there was a mistake. And 37% or 38, whatever it was, said there's a mistake. And then they published that and said, well, that's fact. That's the deal. So it is, we've had all kinds of figures bandied about. The one figure that I can tell you is accurate is that 45% of all disputes filed with the credit bureaus are found to be unfounded. People thought there was a mistake, or they wanted it to be a mistake, or they wanted it to be an error, but it wasn't. Almost half. So sometimes when people say there's something inaccurate in their credit report, it isn't. There is, in these employment reports, I think you heard testimony that the discriminatory because minorities have lower credit scores. Credit scores are never part of an employment report, period. And there was some testimony, I don't remember if it was here or in the Senate, that medical information, well, you might, there might be a bill coded as a medical bill, but it would never say what you were treated for or any of that kind of stuff. So I wanted to clear those things up, and I wanted to say that we are somewhat concerned about the term substantially job-related in this bill. We're not sure what that means. I'm finding it a little bit ironic. You guys passed a bill, 2189, in the 2009 regular session that gave DCBS the authority to require credit reports for mortgage originators that are hired by my clients, mortgage bankers and mortgage. And DCBS has now moved to rulemaking on that and are now requiring credit reports for any loan originator hired by a licensee under Chapter 86. And they've gone so far as to say if they have more than 3 60-day lates, you can't hire them. Something like that. It's so very specific. So on the one hand, we have state agencies requiring these, and on the other hand, we have you considering restricting their use. I think it's somewhat ironic. With that, I'll end, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Vice Chair. Mike Dewey, representing NFIB. NFIB, Jan Meekums is here. She is new to NFIB as a couple days ago. We are sitting in on their behalf. The Oregon Cable Telecommunications Association, and I can provide to you, if you'd like, the information that Comcast uses. I have that available. Their notice in authorization for consumer reports and the protections that are afforded an individual who may be a prospective employee. And in some cases, they do use credit reports depending on the type of position. And also, we represent First Choice that does provide the information to employers. They're one of the entities that does that. If I may, and Mr. Marquis did, I think, an excellent job of describing the, if you will, how the rules of the road work, because there has been some misinformation on that, and what the protections are. I will not get into that. I'll start with the assumption that a credit report in some jobs is important for making the right decision. Particularly for small employers, they need as many tools available to decide who to employ. The last thing you want to do is make the wrong decision. I would say that there have been those that have talked about the correlation between, if you will, theft, identity theft, something that is illegal in a credit report. I find it very interesting because, as Representative Hanna has pointed out, there are some federal exemptions. And in this bill, there is an exemption for cities, ports, school districts, mass transit, a whole host of exemptions. And it's, you know, it seems to me that they're just one of those, and these are, you know, commissioned by the you know, some a police officer and the like, and that's the language dealing with public safety officers and the like. But what I'm getting at is this is a tool we use. It is a flag that somebody might have, a red flag. It seems to me if you have two individuals that you're not sure about and somebody has a poor record, you might say to them, can you explain the situation to me? And I'd appreciate that. If it's a foreclosure, why? That seems to make sense. And I think somebody would do that. We are concerned about the substantially related. I can say that we understand there may be a rulemaking. We don't have any sideboards around that. We would appreciate that because we're not clear what that's going to be by any means. And it might be, I assume it's going to be a temporary rule because this is effective July 1. I do know that unfortunately we will get calls from individuals to say, okay, are we okay to do a credit report? And we're going to say in some instances, we don't know. And we think it's important to flesh that out. If you can do that, that would make a difference in terms of how we look at this legislation. I do appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Powell, representing Oregon's 36 county sheriffs. And first, I want to say that the amendment and the exemption for law enforcement that's in the Engross bill was graciously provided by Senator Rosenbaum, and after I testified in front of her committee, she did forward this amendment. And I, due to the quick time frame of this session, got feedback after that the sheriffs had some concerns, primarily about the definitional qualities of subsection C of section 2 on lines 16 through 20 of page 1. Subsequent to getting that feedback, Mr. Campbell from the Association of Chiefs of Police and I talked to people at the police training agency, and they referred us to a definitional section which would answer our concerns. So we had an amendment drafted. It's the A7 amendment, which would replace that section of the bill to refer to a section that defines the positions that would be covered under this exemption. So we would urge the committee to seriously consider the A7 amendment as a friendly amendment to the bill. And again, I thank the senator for working with us on this. I'm not saying she approves this. She can speak for herself on that. But we do feel very strongly that we need to know exactly who this applies to, and we think the wording in the A engrossed bill leaves that a lot of questions for some of the people that work in the law enforcement community.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nolan.
Good. Mr. Markey, you talked about how easy you found it to correct an error in your credit report through an online access. Have you ever tried to do that by phone?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, no. I haven't. And in all fairness, the mistake I found was in the header material, it wasn't from a disputed debt. Those things do take time. We employ hundreds of people at TransUnion who are not in the sales force but just do that work of trying to sort that out. And part of the problem in sorting that out, frankly, is that the TransUnion and these other credit reporting agencies, they don't just put something on your credit report. It is reported to them by some retailer or bank or someone else, and they get those pieces of information from all of those people who report to them. And so when that is reported to them as a valid debt, then it goes on the credit report. And if you dispute that, then they have to go back to the person who put it on. And under the Federal Fair Credit Reporting Act, you have the right to do that. And there is a requirement that they respond within 30 days, et cetera, et cetera. And so there is a process, but it does take time. I don't deny that. And again, in 45% of the time, it's found to be a valid.
And I find it ironic that you are disputing unsubstantiated data and then tossing around some of your own as well. So we can have a lot of dueling data here, but I'm not sure that throwing numbers out really illuminates our debate. My follow-up question is, what counsel would you give to someone who doesn't have access to a computer, got laid off from their job, applied for another job, thinks that their credit score might be an error and cause for their not getting the next job, and they're supposed to do what?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, there are any number of ways to check your, to get your, I mean, if you don't want to go to a computer, you can call the bureaus, and you can have your credit report mailed to you. We encourage people to check their credit report regularly, and there are free ways to do that. People don't do it, but they can.
May I address another panelist? Mr. Dewey, you talked about wanting some of your employer members and the groups you're representing to be able to do this. How much time do they typically have between the point at which they might access a credit report and when they need to fill the position? Do they typically wait around 30, 45, 60 days to fill a position?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, I mean, obviously it's going to depend on the position. My sense is for certain positions that would where they this is an employer that believes that the credit report is another tool to use, and if they're going to make the decision that it's important to have this, recognize that you just don't do this for the fun of it. They do cost money, and in this day and age, as employers are trying to figure out a way to step back and figure out how to cut budgets and the like, this might be an area if there, you know, if it wasn't important to them. So for certain types of jobs, it does seem to me that they're going to take the time to make sure they hire the right person, get the right information. And so if they're asking for a credit report, they need to make sure they have the credit report before they hire that individual or make that consideration.
Quick follow-up.
Yes.
My question was whether these particular folks you're talking about typically wait 30 or 45 or 60 days to fill a position?
Again, Mr. Chair and Representative, it's going to be hard to say depending on the position. I do know that there are, you know, in terms of two or three interviews over a period of time, 45 days is not necessarily a long time to hire somebody.
If I might.
Yes.
I'd like a specific example of someone who is willing to wait 45 days while an applicant corrects an error in a credit report and hold a job open that long for the applicant. I'd just like a specific example. Not, it doesn't have to be today, but if you could come back with a couple of examples of people who would say, sure, I'd be willing to wait 45 days before I fill this position so that I can give that applicant an opportunity to correct the record.
I'm happy to do that. Just to, if I may, Mr. Sure. Chair, again, it does seem to me that if you have two individuals or three or four and you're not sure and you have somebody that is eminently qualified for this job and has, for whatever reason, poor credit, and the discussion we've had is primarily not about people that don't handle money well, but about foreclosures, circumstances that are, you know, beyond their control. They lost their job, they lost their house, those kinds of things. It does seem to me that you're going to ask the person, now here's the situation we have. Tell me about what happened. And you can have that conversation without, if you will, correcting a credit report. I understand it's a different angle than what you're asking. But if somebody were to say, you know, I think that's an error, or I'm concerned about errors in my report, I think the employer ought to listen to
that. And then I'm done. One more follow-up, Mr.
Yes.
Chair. Is there anything preventing an employer from having that conversation without having a credit report? Do they need the credit report in order to have that conversation?
Mr. Chair and Representative Nolan, you know, as I said, I mean, clearly there are certain entities that think they need a credit report, notwithstanding this law. You can have that conversation. The question is, though, what the person may or may not say, and I'm not talking about the integrity of this person, but you may get a little bit different view of their financial situation in a conversation as opposed to what's in a actual credit report.
So just to be clear, what I heard was there's nothing currently preventing an employer from asking that question during an application process.
I think you have to, Mr. Chair and Representative Nolan, I'm not an expert on the Fair Credit Reporting Act, but I do think you have to be concerned about certain questions you ask about that without getting to the next stage.
Representative Berger.
Yeah, I'm looking, Mr. Powell, at the A7 and the language in the original bill that you're trying to fix. And I have problems with both after reading 181610, because it both leave out things like youth correction. If I read it correctly, and I'm reading three documents simultaneously here, and I'm just raising a red flag here that there's, I'm not sure where you're trying to get, but I'm not sure if we got there yet either, in terms of who's in and who's out in terms of police and corrections, and what's intended. I'm
Chair Roblin.
And excuse me for trying to do my homework as I'm sitting here looking at a.
I think we're all in that boat. I've been trying to read that statute here, and with my eyesight, I keep enlarging.
Well, I'm glad you can read it on that little thing.
People,
and I got
people
the big
think
book.
I'm in some kind of. I think the issue you raise is a valid one. I have to admit that we explained our situation from the sheriffs and the chiefs to the people who administer the training laws. And this is the reference they gave us that would encompass the people that we employ. There could be agencies of government that fall outside of these definitions, and I think that there may be some validity to that, and they should hire a lobbyist immediately.
Mr. Chair, there's some questions in here that I maybe now is not the time to resolve, but I'm raising them.
Thank you.
Reading.
Any further questions? Yes, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having heard, I think from Representative Roblin, excuse me, Representative Hanna, about sophisticated marketing program.
That's ours, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, that's ours, yeah.
Yeah. I'm wondering, have any of the companies that you're representing done any peer-reviewed studies about the relationship between credit history and job performance?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, first of all, I don't represent a variety of companies. I only represent TransUnion in this area. But we don't heavily market employment reports, so just set the record straight on that. We haven't done any studies. Actually, it was a meeting last week, and we are considering doing one because this is becoming an issue out there, and people are saying, gee, there's no correlation. And I heard somebody say today that there is no statistical correlation. Well, there hasn't, to my knowledge, been any studies done to test that. And I, again, TransUnion is looking at probably doing one this year, and I would bet my house that the results will show a very strong correlation, not between credit and job performance, but between risk for employee fraud, identity theft, and the like. And that's why I believe employers use these.
Thank
Representative
you.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to want to inquire from others, and I thought maybe the other folks could respond to if they know if their companies have in any way been involved in any peer-reviewed studies.
Mr. Chair and Representative Jensen, I, from the first choice perspective, I have not heard that they have done anything. I will find that out. I would say, though, that in terms of setting up that study, you'd want to do it over a significant period of time, because you'd start with the basis of year one and go through a number of years to find out, you know, what has happened. And so your sample would need to be, you know, this is a fairly sophisticated study that would need to be done. I'd be concerned about a 1 or 2 year study of some sort, but nonetheless, it's, you know, clearly complicated.
Thank you, Mr. Powell. Does that have any application?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jensen, I don't believe it does.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's all for right now on that topic.
Thank you. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Powell, you represent county sheriffs. Do you know how many sheriff's departments within the state of Oregon use credit checks as part of their employment practices?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hanna, I believe most of them do. The ones I've talked to use them for a variety of issues. One of the problems, particularly in smaller agencies, is that with the budget situations, they have people multitasking all the time. So you're hired in one job, somebody can't work the next day, you may be placed in another position. So they're not necessarily just hiring somebody that they know will handle cash, for example, because they do have cash at the jail and those sorts of things. So they don't hire necessarily just somebody for that spot, and people may be coming in and out of those positions where they handle cash. So I think that almost all of them use credit.
Paul?
Yes.
So thank you. Of those who do, of the substantial number who do you know why?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hanna, clearly in a law enforcement environment, trust is one of the most essential elements that you cannot afford to make a mistake in terms of hiring on a basis of hiring somebody who doesn't fit in that chain of command, whether it be in the jail or on the street. And so they try to get as much information as they possibly can so they get the right person, because the training costs in these agencies are very high. For a peace officer now, it's 16 weeks at the academy, and those costs are very high. You cannot afford many mistakes. And so they try their best to develop as much information, get the right people, and invest in those people. And that's why I think this is one of the tools they use.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank this panel. And our last panel, I think we had a couple questions for Representative Rosenbaum and Representative Kotek. And Senator Rosenbaum. Senator Representative Kotek and Commissioner Avakian.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, Brad Avakian, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. I appreciate you asking me to come to the hearing today to answer questions or make a statement regarding the bill. We are the state's chief law enforcement agency regarding civil rights matters, and upon passage will be the agency that implements Senate Bill 1045. There are two things that we're very glad to see in the bill. The first from Section 2, Subsection 1, of course, the subsection that provides strong protection for Oregon citizens with respect to these credit reporting situations, and then the necessary Subsection 2, which attempts to strike a balance between the needs of Oregon's businesses and the necessity to protect individuals. Fits well within our Bureau, which has a duty to protect individuals, but at the same time, the other half of the Bureau, through our technical assistance program, works with Oregon's employers in order to meet their needs as well. We think that the bill does strike a necessary balance, and we think that we can implement the bill fairly. Now, there were some comments with respect to our rules process. I understand that the legislature will be looking to the Bureau of Labor and Industries to do rulemaking on the bill. We can fulfill all of the legal requirements in adopting rules within 49 days, or at a minimum of 49 days. We think that we're looking at something more like 60 days in order to do justice in the process, which will be well in advance of the time when this bill's effective date will occur.
Thank you. Either of you? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North Portland. I just wanted to make a couple comments. There was a comment made about the difficulty in finding out the information you need to make a hiring decision. This bill would still allow criminal background checks, employment history. The whole topic of how reference checks are provided to employers between employers is a whole other issue, and my understanding is there is latitude under the law to do things. I understand some employers might not want to provide information, but that's really a separate issue. There was a discussion about wanting to have a broader definition to include financial services. I believe it was Mr. Cosgrove. I know there was an attempt, a very last-minute attempt, to try to come up with a definition that would be more inclusive, and Senator Rosenbaum could address that, but it just wasn't workable, and I believe that the substantially job-related exception would cover those businesses who've been using it historically. The discussion around the other states, it is Hawaii and Washington. Washington implemented their bill July of 2007. Interesting to note, it was passed in April. Similar timeline in terms of rulemaking. There has been no case law or concerns about that bill in Washington state around this substantially job-related. The whole discussion around correcting your report, I understand that line of questioning, but I think we just, to make sure people get this, if you have an error in your report, first you have to know that this employer is actually using it. You have to know that you have an error. You have to correct that error. At this point, that job offer has been made and gone to somebody else. The amount of time you would have to get that fixed and then come back to that person and say, oh, by the way, you should reconsider me, is probably not going to happen, and certainly not going to happen in this job environment. And I think Senator Rosenbaum can address some of the issues around the A7 amendment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and I guess it's not quite the end of another long day in the supplemental session, but I appreciate, again, your considering Senate Bill 1045A. I want to just, you had my written testimony, and I spoke for quite a while yesterday. I just want to address a few points that I think are on the minds of committee members. One is that we seem to be having this kind of circular argument about, you know, if proponents of the bill are saying this information is not very useful or predictive, why are we allowing it
at all for anybody. I think that it's important to note this bill really does strike a balance between those that believe the information is relevant and useful, those practices and jobs where it is commonly used, and then the fact that there really is no evidence that the information has predictive value. And I don't think that's really something that a lot more research needs to be done on. I could tell you that up in my office I have stacks like this of studies and reports that have been done. And when the industry itself comes forward and says they have no studies that show a statistical correlation between credit history and job performance or likelihood to commit fraud, it's not because they haven't tried. It's just because that hasn't been established. But I really don't think that's at most fundamentally what this bill is about. It's not even really about whether the inaccuracies in these credit reports, which I think are well established, are difficult to correct, and they are. And I can tell you of people who work in this building who have found things on their credit reports that are years old that should have been taken off, that they had been assured by institutions had been taken off, and they haven't been. But it really is, I think, when you think about it, particularly right now in this terrible economy, whether you would expect, if you were somebody out there seeking a job, to have to go into a job interview and try to explain why somebody in your family had a health problem, lost their job, you then lost your home. And, you know, think about when you were trying to get your last job. Maybe it's been a while for most of you. What you usually do is you buy the nicest outfit, or sometimes you borrow it from an institution set up to give people nice clothes. You try to put your best face forward, and then you try to compete based on your legitimate qualifications to do the job. The fact that you have unpaid bills really is not predictive of your ability to perform the job. The bill has provided numerous exceptions for financial institutions, for public safety officers, for situations where the information is required by law, and the language that was negotiated with Associated Oregon Industries, the substantially job-related language, which has stood the test of time in Washington State since 2007. I did want to just briefly address the -A7 amendments, which I did just see this morning. I think the problem with them, and Representative Berger, you were trying to look up the statute, I was doing the same and talking to legislative counsel, is that the language that's in the bill attempted to address the problems that Mr. Powell brought to me, one of which in particular was that they want to be able to check this information not just for full-time law enforcement people, but for people that are part-time or temporary. They have referenced a definition now that under police officer does say they have to be full-time. So I actually think the bill struck a good balance. They also included corrections officers. I can tell you, having spoken to the head of the DOC, that they do not use credit history to check corrections officers at all now and have no intention of doing so in the future. So I'm not sure why that was pulled back in that -7 amendment. But finally, I just think this bill is one that speaks to a real problem. It is not the strictest bill in the country. It's not even as strict as Washington State right across the border, which only allows exceptions for substantially job-related or required by law. We have acknowledged these other situations, the law enforcement situation, the financial institution situation. I don't think it would ever be possible, if we were here till the cows come home, to satisfy everybody who wants to see something changed in this bill, unless the answer is just not to pass the bill at all. We worked long and hard, and people have come forward who never appeared in a hearing room from January over the four hearings, the many hours of hearings that we held. And I think it's because, you know, there every state that has considered this, people have come forward and said, just don't do anything. So I think the question before you today, and one I would urge you to answer aye to, is people in Oregon who are working hard, struggling, and trying to get jobs have a right to have a balanced law that respects the rights of employers, but also acknowledges that they need to be able to compete for jobs based on their qualifications and not the fact that they had either an inaccuracy or perhaps some financial difficulty that just reflects life circumstances that I think our constituents are facing all too frequently now. And I would urge your moving this bill out to the floor and passing it favorably. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions? Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would direct this to either the good senator or the good representative. The part of this bill that I keep tussling with is the exemptions, because it seems to me all the folks who have exemptions must believe there's some sort of correlation or value between the credit profile and job performance, or they wouldn't have asked for the exemption. Can you respond to that?
I think that you're right. I think there is a lot of disagreement about whether credit history relates to job performance. I think the example, Mr. Chair, Representative Girard, that always comes up in this context is Bernie Madoff. Bernie Madoff was in a highly trusted position, handled billions and billions of the wealth of this country, and, you know, as far as everybody knew who invested with him, he was an above-board person who was very smart and knew what he was doing. I have not heard anybody say that he ever had any unpaid bills or problems with his credit. However, what he did was unforgivable and unconscionable and really lost billions of dollars for many people, which has resulted in massive litigation that will probably go on, you know, way into the next legislative session. I think that's a good example of how, had you looked for that information about in a highly trusted position, you wouldn't have been able to predict that this guy was essentially a pyramid scheme crook. However, this bill acknowledges that there is a strongly held belief by parts of the employer community that they need this information, and it's useful, and it does respect those situations where it's commonly asked for, provides a broad exemption with language that has stood the test of time and was suggested by employers for all those employers who aren't covered by the other exemptions. So all I can say to you is I think it is a good, balanced piece of legislation and one that I believe the agency has told you today they will be able to implement in an efficient and fair way.
And Mr. Chair, good representative, this has been a good experience for me working with the good senator, because I'm probably one of those folks that if I had the ideal bill, I would say I don't think there's a correlation. But we have struck a balance based on what we know other employers have been using, and that's what we're trying to do here. We could have a philosophical debate about whether this is really relevant at all. But the fact remains is some places use it, and we're trying to strike that balance. And what I would say is if these employers think it's such a great idea when they do a job application, why aren't they checking it on all their folks that work there? I think if they really ask themselves that question, then we'd get into the privacy issues of invading the privacy of their employees. I think there's a lot of discomfort for people checking people's credit history, and we're trying to strike a balance to say, for those who have used it for a while, let's provide some sensible exceptions, but let's stop the creep of other employers using it just because they think it might help them when we have no data to show that.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. It seems really when you come down to this question, the answer is it's going to vary from person to person whether there's a correlation or not, and nobody's ever going to know. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rosenbaum, I think you made a terrific point with your story about Bernie Madoff. How about we check his credit now if he were applying for that same job? Do you think then it would have an impact?
Chair Roblin, Representative Hannah, I don't know, because as far as I know, I thought he was on his way to being incarcerated now, and his assets have been sold off. I doubt still, but I don't know whether he has bad credit. I doubt he's applying for credit at the moment, but that would be probably a fun little investigative
However, I would guess you wouldn't hire him because his criminal background check would show that, you know, embezzlement and other things. So I don't think you would need to get to the credit history check.
Follow up?
Yes.
Well, to your point, Representative, I disagree. I mean, obviously, many corporations hire those who have fooled or tricked or bilked them out of billions because they have a skill set specific to providing help as to how not to have that happen. But back to the question, Senator, if you did know that as an employer and that skill set was necessary, you used the example of everybody thought he was okay, but when you knew that his credit had been ruined because of poor judgment, do you think it would have an impact?
Chair Roblin, Representative Hanna, I wasn't bringing that example up because I think that that he even has poor credit or that would have been helpful, but because clearly it's difficult to evaluate people in positions like that, and so maybe it was a poor example to use. I think a better example to use is maybe somebody who's an electrician in an industry that has in construction now ranging between 25% and 45% unemployment in Oregon today, and whether it is really a good idea to have somebody's history of some unpaid bills be an obstacle to our good working Oregonians be able to get back to work and support their families. I think most people would say the common sense answer to that is no, it isn't helpful. It isn't going to help the employer know if that person knows how to wire a building or somebody dig a ditch or somebody be able to groom a dog. And those are all the folks that need jobs, and those are jobs where I think credit history would not be substantially job related. And I don't think it's helpful to employers really in this situation either.
Follow up.
Yep.
Thank you, and I appreciate that. We just saw the example come as differently. I saw it as a perfect example of why it would be important. You mentioned with an indication like this that you had studies. Are those studies done by businesses, state and federal agencies that currently use credit reports to say why they're not statistically valid?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hanna, I think the studies have been done by a variety of different entities. Some of them are academic institutions. Some of them are employer-funded groups. I couldn't really tell you specifically where the source of all of those studies has been. But I can tell you there has been a lot of analysis and research because the use of credit reports is much more than just for employment purposes. This bill deals with a very narrow part of the industry. I think the application of credit history, where it's been statistically shown to correlate, has been more in financial transactions like loans and things like that. And insurance rating is something where there's been a lot of research. But in this area, there also has been research. And unlike in the use of credit for insurance purposes, where there is a lot of evidence that there's a correlation, in this area, there just is not.
Thank you, Senator. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
I never heard an answer to the question, do you have written reports that you could provide to this body from federal or state agencies that currently require and or any other business that requires credit reports to show that they're not somehow statistically valid?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, I guess you asked a compound question, whether I have reports that are done by agencies that use credit reports showing they're not statistically valid. I don't. And whether I have studies from employers who use credit reports showing they're not statistically valid, I don't know the answer to that one. I have certainly ask the industry to produce any studies that show that they are, and they have not done so.
Thank you. I have a follow-up.
Okay.
Commissioner Avakian, appreciate you being here because you do get to create the rule of law. We heard some testimony earlier that your department could create administrative rule, but that rule wouldn't apply to private right of action. Was that testimony correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I hesitate just because it's a very broadly worded question. We certainly have rulemaking authority over the statutes that you passed. I think it would be hard-pressed for us to create rules that controlled the judicial branch of government. And so I guess depending on what the specific rule proposed was, the answer could be different.
Follow-up?
Yeah.
So I think the testimony was given around the context of substantially job-related. And so if your agency is asked to rule on or creates rule around substantially job-related, that rule would apply to private right of action as well as or not. I mean, what I understood, what I heard in terms of testimony was that the private right of action would still be an issue dealt with by a jury, not by administrative rule on that definition.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I appreciate the clarification on your question. I think we'd be hard-pressed to write rules that would affect the procedure within the judicial branch. With respect to the interpretation of terms in the law, like the one you just mentioned, our rulemaking prior to the effective date, I think, would certainly have an effect on how our agency or a court would apply the law.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate it. Are you aware of state agencies outside of law enforcement that use credit history as part of their employment practice?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have any information one way or the other on that.
Okay. Can follow up? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
How about to the idea that from a BOLI perspective, this helps business? What's your perspective on that in terms of how this helps business or how you help business with this rule?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative, I think I would take the intent of this bill as primarily a protection for the citizens of Oregon. It's being incorporated within the civil rights statutes of the state. But it's important, just as with any other civil rights bill that we have in our statutes, that you have some type of a balance that meets the needs of employers. And I think that this bill attempts to strike that balance. So if your question is how does it help, it certainly attempts to exempt certain industries in the subsection we mentioned earlier, and then certainly has a broader exception with the substantially job-related language that allows any business within the state to come in and plead their case as to why they should be able to use credit reporting. So it doesn't act as a complete preclusion on any industry and instead allows for a way for industry to state their case. I think that is a significant issue of fairness for Oregon's industries.
This is a complicated issue.
I will grant you one or two. We've got to...
Yeah, I understand. I mean, okay. This for those who have been involved with this for some time, I'm sorry. It's a tough one, and it's one I'd like to understand fully. Would job descriptions be considered? I mean, you talked about specific industry, but what about specific job descriptions? Would those be included in potential exclusions?
Mr. Chair, since the good representative is looking straight at me, I'm assuming that question is directed to me.
Pardon me, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. Commissioner, thank you. I'm sorry about that clarification. Commissioner Avakian, do you believe job descriptions would be considered, i.e., you are a vault teller in a large chain store? I mean...
Mr. Chair, Representative, let me preface my answer with this. There are two ways to begin defining terms that you're at least implying are ambiguous. One of them is the record that you're all creating here and the language that you decide to adopt, which will be very important to us in our rulemaking process. But the other is the rulemaking process itself. We have great respect for that process. I want to be careful not to tell you something today that sounds like a predetermination on an important issue before Oregon's businesses have had a chance to come in and talk to us about the way the rules should be drafted. And so with that understood, I would think that an employer should be able to present any evidence it thinks is important to explain why a credit report would be substantially job-related. And I would not anticipate us ignoring things like job descriptions, because I would guess that would be something important to employers in presenting to us. But again, I think a good rulemaking process will sift some of that out.
Thank you.
Okay, further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Jensen.
I'm sorry if I, no, I'm not sorry. If I opened a can of worms about studies, but when I asked the question, I specifically referred to peer-reviewed studies. And I would be interested, the panel, of that answer to that question, whether they have any peer-reviewed studies. I see somebody nodding their head, but they don't have to bring them up here. And let me just forego the need, Mr. Chair, for a whole bunch of running around on that right now. But consistently, all of the witnesses that people who have come up and testified have emphasized that there's no correlation between credit and job performance. And the first problem I have with that is obviously where the study was, and if it was peer-reviewed studies. The second problem I have with that statement about correlations is correlations do not cause and effect make. Just because something is correlated does not mean that it has anything, any relationship to anything else or to the other variable being talked about. And statisticians go to some great length to establish the significance of this and of the correlation. So, as a kind of second point with that, if there are good peer-reviewed studies that there is no cause and effect relationship between credit and job performance, then I think we're missing the boat with your bill when you offer some exceptions. I would think it should apply to across the board, to all careers and all professions. And I know there are people who will, I probably will have my email saturated tomorrow morning with people defending this in the law enforcement area and so forth, but that's okay. And that's kind of where I was coming from. I get really paranoid when we start talking about a correlation. The implication always is there's a cause and effect relationship, and that's not necessarily true. As a matter of fact, more often than not, it isn't true.
Okay. You want to address that?
Well, if I may, Mr. Chair and Representative, only because I think you're striking on an extremely important point of the analysis, and I don't think it's unusual to this bill. You've seen this discussion about correlations occur in other types of civil rights bills in state legislatures and in Congress. As an example, the whole discussion around the Americans with Disabilities Act and the corresponding state statute about what kind of questions you can ask of an individual who may or may not have a disability. What I mean is you can ask somebody, can you lift 50 pounds? Because that relates directly to the job. You can't ask them, do you have multiple sclerosis? The reason I bring up that analogy is the notion of whether you have multiple sclerosis or not only gives you information that leads to an assumption about what the person can do or cannot do on the job, as opposed to can you lift 50 pounds tells you whether they can do or not do what the job requires. In this case, the question of the information on a credit report only gives you information that leads to an assumption about whether someone is going to steal from you or whether or not they can do certain things on the job, as opposed to the criminal history check, which you can still do if this bill passes, which allows you to know whether or not they have actually committed fraud or stole from an employer before. So what we try and avoid in the analysis is information that simply leads to an assumption that may or may not be something in reality, as opposed to something like the criminal history check, which gives you the real answer. It avoids the need for correlation completely.
Anybody else that wants to answer that, address that question?
Mr. Chair and Representative Jensen, just quickly, there's only one study that we're aware of, and it is in an academic journal, I assume peer-reviewed. I'd have to look at all the details, but they investigated job applicant credit history and predicting subsequent employee turnover. In terms of credit history has no validity in differentiating between negative, i.e. terminated for dishonesty, versus non-negative, sickness or relocation for reasons for leaving, and had no validity at distinguishing these employees from those who remained on the job. That's only the one study we have, and it's a peer-reviewed as far as I know. So.
In an academic journal, probably, but not necessarily, depending on the journal.
It depends on which one I have to check.
Are you trying to shut me up?
No. But short questions would be better.
Well, I'm just going to say that I thought Commissioner Vakian, fairly well illustrated exactly the point that I'm trying to make on a somewhat different level or different area. I have had a good deal of experience in the legislature, watching this correlation thing go round and round sort of thing. And most of my experience on it comes in the natural resource basis and having to do with things like the Endangered Species Act. I've seen more misuse of this phenomenon that we're talking about here in that area. And as a consequence, I see a relationship, a correlation here, and I don't want to go too far with that, but I get curious when we start using those terms. I am very serious that if there is good peer-reviewed study, then I think you ought to review the bill and come back in a future time. I don't want to do it this session, Mr. Chair, but in a future legislature and add in all those folks who are currently subjected to the credit study or credit investigation. So
Thank you. And Representative Garrett, do you want to have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
This will probably be the last one. We have Ways and Means that is meeting now, and there's members on this committee that have to go there. So.
Okay, I'll try and be really fast. It's for the commissioner. I can appreciate you can't predetermine the outcome of rulemaking, but I do want to ask you this question. It's pretty clear to me that the substantially job-related term ought to apply to financial institutions, maybe not absolutely categorically, but I think the purpose of exempting banks and credit unions would apply equally to some of the types of entities that Mr. Cosgrove was talking about. And what my concern would be, what I'd like you to address, is that you not actually interpret the bill's reference only to banks and credit unions to reflect an intent by us that it not apply to those other institutions? Do you follow the question?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think it would be most helpful to us to have as clear a legislative record as possible, knowing what you all think before we enter our rulemaking process is important. And I do just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for giving me the opportunity to do the rulemaking on this and continue hearing the testimony that you've been listening to for 3 weeks. I frankly think there are a lot of differing opinions about it, and you'll sort some of it out, and some of it will be sorted out through our rulemaking process.
Okay, I am going.
And I know you need to go. One final comment, though, Mr. Chair, in answer to Rep. Garrett's question, is that specifically, and this is only one entity, the Credit Union Association did raise concerns in our hearings about the fact that the exemption applied only to federally insured banks and credit unions because they felt that they have auxiliary organizations that they deal with. When we showed them the language we had negotiated between BOLI and AOI, substantially job-related, they showed it to their attorneys at a national level. They were quite comfortable that that language covered all of the situations and these were other auxiliary organizations in which they would need this information. So I think that's one example of how we've been able to reassure the industry that this is workable.
I am going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1045. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1045. Representative Nolan.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1045A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Nolan moves Senate Bill 1045A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Berger, discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very brief. I was going to engage in this conversation. I share a lot of the concerns of Representative Girard. I'm on the opposite side of the fence from Representative Jensen. I see a lot of professions where, for public safety reasons, there ought to be exceptions. In other words, to protect the public is the goal of the credit check. I'm very concerned that we haven't caught them all. So I am going to oppose this bill, but reserve the right to change my mind when I've satisfied myself that we have gotten there. When we write statutes, I mean, this discussion has shown how hard this is. And you can't, I agree, dog walkers shouldn't have credit checks. I mean, we can all think of the examples that are simple. It's the ones that are not so simple, that have public safety implications that I'd like to be sure we get. And I'm not sure we're there yet. So because the hour is late, I want to move on. But I do have issues, and I'm happy to talk about them.
I have a problem with why we have some of the exemptions in this bill that we have, so I'll be a no.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sympathetic to the sponsor's intent with this bill, but I'm still concerned about the practicality of its implementation, given concerns about the the exemptions of particular industries versus the application of the substantially job-related clause to various positions. So for the purposes of this work session, I will give a courtesy yes with and reserve the right to change my vote on the floor.
Okay. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure I really understand, where the representative from Salem and I are. Of course, she disagrees so much with me on this. I understood earlier in the day why she disagreed with me, but I'm not sure I understand it on this, but that should be a sidebar issue with the representative. I respectfully will not be able to support the bill as it is written now. I'm not convinced of the perhaps the need, and I think more than anything else, the one thing that kind of escapes me, and I do very much appreciate the role that the position that some people find themselves in, that they find it difficult to impossible to getting a job And that on some occasions that may be blamed on a credit report, and in some cases that may in fact be exactly the case. But there's another side of me that says that the people who are employing these folks, the business involved, also has some things to be considered. And understanding that the better that business is able to select its employees, and I'm sure Representative Hanna will vouch for me on this with his experience in the private sector, that the thing an employer really lusts after are hardworking, honest, faithful employees, and that's what everybody is really looking for. Employers are looking for out there, and I'd use the example of, I suppose, Representative Hanna and I are applying for a job that we're both very well qualified. His only handicap is that he is chronologically disadvantaged by being quite young, as contrasted to myself, has the somewhat of an advantage on him in that respect by having a good deal more experience. But otherwise, I mean, we're equally well qualified for the job. He has a very bad credit history. I have a very good credit history. Is it wrong that the employer should want someone that has that stability? I think not. I think that's a reasonable thing to expect to give the employer, the right to hire people that that have the stability of having a good credit history. Now, I do appreciate that there are people who, through no fault of their own, run into obstacles along the way in life. And I would hope that we are involved as a legislature in trying to iron those out and make life fair, if that's the right word, for those people. But I don't think we want to forget about the guy on the other side of the fence here, and that's the one that's providing the job, because the better employees that the person has, the more successful that business is going to be, the more successful the business is going to be, the more people that they're going to be employing. And I can't get away from that, and that's the principal reason that I would be voting no on this.
Representative Hanna?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Several comments around this piece of legislation. One is, I guess I'm an eternal optimist and believe that successful business in America and in Oregon is successful based on a repetitive chain of good decisions, and therefore making a continual chain of bad decisions is not purposeful. If 50 or 60% of corporations or employers use this practice, I fail to see the reason being, or the only reason being, that those who provide the information are such great salesmen, despite the humor that was provided today. Secondly, I ask the question of our own DAS in this building, and of the agencies that they surveyed, 21% of the agencies they surveyed said, we do this. And I said, why? And of those agencies, one said, the purpose is for consideration of initial employment and promotions. Another said, credit history is considered for initial employment and for promotions into any of the above positions that did not have one before. A third said, a credit check on every employee upon initial employment. So for all three agencies, credit history information is used along with a variety of other information on employment decisions. Despite what some people in the public think, I also believe state agencies have some very competent, hardworking individuals who also practice good management. And I do not believe they either are simply convinced that the reason for running a credit history report on the people they've talked about in the answer is because they're gullible buyers of information. It just doesn't add up. This is an ill-thought-through piece of legislation, and one I will not be in favor of.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Berard?
No.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Yeltsin?
Aye.
Representative Hanna?
No.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
No.
Chair Robin?
Aye. Motion passes. It will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Representative Kotek will carry. With that, we're going to close our work session on Senate Bill 1045A, and we are going to carry over Senate Bill 1014A to the next session. And with that, we're going to close our rules meeting.
I know you're going to swap votes on the.
Oh, wait, hold it.
Did you need something before he closes?
No, I was looking to make sure they turned the mic off.
Did you vote on the other? Did you vote on the other rules before you got to this?
No.
Okay.
Thank you. We're done. We did it.
That was
gavel was already down.
3:30 tomorrow.
Put the mics on.
That's the only thing we did.